I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you for listening. It's wonderful to be with you. Molly's just been explaining about her new shoes to me.
I got some new boots.
Yes, they're sort of black and they look lumberjacky.
They're made by a company called Red Wing and they usually make like men's in a tan colour. They have a shop not far off Covent Garden. Not Endell Street, maybe Earlham Street.
Could be.
They did anyway. I don't know if they still
do. I'm wearing your Comme des Garçons.
But you got a new colour.
Yeah, black. Very black. Exciting. Ooh, very, nice. Very, very exciting.
And Geoffrey's in a book.
Yes, wonderful. Molly just arrived with a book in which there's a picture of me, which is very exciting.
I think we did talk about, did we? Talk
we did,
on the
I
podcast
think.
About you, the man taking your photo.
That's right, because I was on Brighton Pier in between performances.
Yeah.
And I went for a walk. It was a sunny day in October and we were playing the theatre in Brighton, Theatre Royal. Mm. Which has got a very odd stage door. Where you go down the side. Every stage door's at the back, but this one is a particularly odd one.
Now you know about seat numbers and stage doors in all regional theatres.
Yes, I've been in a few stage doors.
How is your recovery post-show?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm much more back to normal now.
Good-o.
But it takes a bit of time. Mm. To readjust. Mm. Because you become so caught up in it. It's such an intense experience. You don't realise how intense it is until you stop it.
Mm.
It's like having something cold or something, or some really nasty cold.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
And I got bound up in it. Well, you would. It's only the two of us. So it's not like that. It's a cast of 15.
No, absolutely.
It's just two of us. Which makes it very, very personal, very intense.
Yeah.
But I think I'm pretty good now. Thank goodness. Good, it's though. Also got I've gone back to World's Most Evil and Britain's Most Evil Killers again. Back series 7.
Mhm.
Off we go again. It's become a perfect routine almost.
No shortness of subject matter.
I think they're struggling to find British ones.
Oh, interesting.
America, there were over hundreds of them.
And Europe.
And Europe, yes. But I've had a couple of suggested to me, which I'll suggest to them. Very interesting. I've had a lot of letters this week from people saying, oh, my case is very interesting and I can tell you all about it, but it's going to take several hours. So I kind of.
I wonder when we get those. I get them sometimes. I don't know what people expect us to be able to do. It's like we're a sort of crime-solving sleuth duo who can go out there and change the
Shakespeare and Hathaway.
We can't though, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's, I've in many ways it's very flattering to be asked. But not always, not so always something I can do. That does disappoint me sometimes. But this particular episode of Blood Ties has really been spurred on by our listeners.
Yes, everyone kept messaging me saying, what does Geoffrey think about this Levi Belfield situation?
Well, let's put it in a bit of background. As you may know, I wrote a book about Levi Belfield, who killed Millie Dowler along with two other girls and attempted to murder a fourth. And Belfield is the only man in England, and indeed the only man in the United Kingdom, to have not one but two whole life terms. He is without question a particularly wicked man. And I attended the trial for Millie Dowler and I wrote about it. And he's featured in Manhunt, based on the Detective Chief Inspector Colin Sutton, who was the senior investigating officer in the search for Levi Belfield. But a week and a half or so ago, a solicitor for a man called Michael Stone, and this all will become clear in a moment, said that he had a signed confession from Levi Belfield that he had in fact committed a particularly well-known murder in July 1996, the murder of her mother, Lynn Russell, and her daughter Megan, who was six, and the attempted murder of Josie Russell, who was age nine. Now, a little background, perhaps. I think I was first approached about the fact or the possibility that Levi Belfield might have killed Lynn and Megan Russell 8-9 years ago. I said then, as I say still, it's possible, but I think it's highly unlikely. And let's do the case, Mo. Let's do the Lynn and Megan Russell case. And then I can explain why I think it's highly unlikely.
So we're doing the case in light of everything that's come out.
In the light of everything that's come out.
Rather than Jeffrey just talking about it, it makes more sense to do the case.
Now.
Yeah, because we've not done it before.
We've not done it before. And it's interesting that the listeners wanted to know. So I want to help explain what I think and also explain the case, because not everybody remembers it. It was in 1996. It's, you know, it's a good time ago now.
It was the year I started at Bryanston.
Yes. Yes, it was. That's right. So measure it in your own years, mate.
I remember it pretty well.
Do you?
Well, she wasn't that far away from me in age, nine. I was 12.
That's right.
I remember her in that hat.
Yes.
Josie Russell, that is.
Josie Russell, the survivor.
Yeah.
Who now lives in Wales and is a painter.
That's nice. Mm.
Has recovered, believe it or not.
Well, recovered.
As much as one they ever can.
Quite. See. Oh, but from the actual attack, physical attack. Yeah.
So this is the case of the murder of Lynn and Megan Russell. The man who was convicted of killing Lynn and Megan Russell is a man called Michael Stone. Now, the crime was committed on my birthday, the 9th of July 1996, in a place called Chillenden in Kent, not very far from Tunbridge Wells, Royal Tunbridge Wells, rural community. And Lynn and Megan and Lynn's other daughter, Josie, were walking back from a swimming gala that they'd all attended. And it was about 4:30 in the afternoon. Quite a bright day. They walked across a field, taking a shortcut across a field, the edge of a field. Anyway, as I believe happened, they encountered a man called Michael Stone. In fact, he was born Michael John Goodban, but he was one of five children. He'd born in probably 1960, there's a certain amount of uncertainty about exactly when. One of five children. His registered father was a man called Ivor Goodban. But Stone always believed...
Ivor Goodban,
yes. But Stone always believed that his real father was a chap called Peter Stone, who was one of his mother's lovers. So he took the name Stone. He was a very, very turbulent childhood. There was lots of domestic abuse. In the end, he ends up in a care home where he's also abused. He doesn't have the happiest of childhoods, let's be fair. He witnessed violence all through his life. And there were attacks on his mother particularly, once with a meat cleaver and another with a hammer. He had extraordinary aggressive mood swings. And he was given to outbursts of the most uncontrollable rage. Very, very disturbed individual. In fact, if you look at the pictures of him, if you just Google him, you'll see what I mean. He looks wild-eyed, would be fair.
Just looking him up.
Yeah. He does look wild-eyed.
Yeah, he does. I see what you mean.
His first brush with the police dated back to 1972 when he was about 11 or 12. And it continues throughout his adult life. After leaving the care home, he becomes addicted to heroin and serves during the 1980s and 1990s three prison terms for robbery, burglary, grievous bodily harm and assault. He's got a long track record. And he always carried knives or guns and used ammonia to squirt in the eyes of his victims when he was stealing from them. He had a very expensive heroin addiction to support, so you can see the cycle. It's not unfamiliar. He was certainly a well-known, quotes, face in the Medway towns in Kent, in that bit of the Medway. You know, a figure that all the police knew. He was just not particularly good news. He got 2 years in 1981 for attacking a man with a hammer. He got 4.5 years in 1983 for stabbing a friend while he was asleep. And the judge suggested at that trial he could go on to kill someone. And he got 10 years for two robberies in the same week in 1986. He was violent towards his partners. He did have partners, in particular a lady called Rachel Marcroft. This was an element of the trial. He attacked Rachel in very much the same way as he was later to attack Lynn Russell, tied her up in the same way. She said, and I think it's very interesting this, she said that he never remembered the violence after he committed it. He did it in a sort of, as if he'd gone into a white rage and he couldn't remember anything. It was just whoosh, and he would do it and then he would be overcome with grief. He was released from prison in 1993 for the 10 years. And he had a record of really severe mental illness. At one point, I think he asked to be sectioned. Under the Mental Health Act. He moved for some reason to Hull. I don't entirely understand why he chose Hull. Anyway, he's diagnosed, finally, in 1994, as suffering from paranoid psychosis and profound personality disorder. But the treatment he's offered, they say he's too dangerous to treat in this hospital. So he's effectively let it go. Off you go. Before you look at me quizzically, these things do happen in the care system. And it's not always possible for us to provide the care that we could. I mean, if ever there was a candidate for Broadmoor, it was certainly Michael Stone. He was a profoundly disturbed man. Anyway, they suspect that he had killed before a man called Francis Jagu in Maidstone in Kent in 1976. He was 16. And he had a series of run-ins with the police, but there's never been any proof of that early killing. Anyway, that brings us to the afternoon of the 9th of July 1996. It's a country lane across a field near Chillenden in Kent. And Lynn and her two daughters and the dog Lucy are walking home. It's a frenzied attack, there's no doubt about that, which lasts for at least 15 minutes. Lynn and the girls walked past a parked car when a man got out with a claw hammer and demanded money. Lynn reportedly offered to go and get some because she didn't have any with her, but a man rejected that and tied her up and then bludgeoned her. Josie, the surviving daughter, ran off, but the man caught her and blindfolded her with strips of the swimming towel that she was carrying on the way back from the gala. Lynn was also blindfolded. Lynn and her younger daughter, Megan, are both killed. Josie is severely injured. And the dog is killed too. Lucy, the dog, is hit with a claw hammer. It is a full-on frenzied attack, which indeed captured the imagination of the nation, because there were no real clues. I mean, Stone was, yes, known to the police, and yes, he had this record of incredible instability, but no, and indeed, it wasn't for an entire year that Stone was even arrested for a crime, and that followed a Crime Watch appeal on BBC television. A psychiatrist came forward and said that just a few days before the killing, Stone had been very, very enraged and started threatening to kill anybody. He'd threatened his probation officer with a hammer, and the e-fit that they finally used on Crime Watch was a remarkable resemblance to Stone.
Is that Josie that did help them with
this? Yes, yeah. But he'd also threatened to kill his sister and one of her children. Now, Stone, there can be no doubt, tried to commit suicide twice on remand and even asked to be admitted to a psychiatric hospital on the day after Lynn and Megan were killed. He's clearly in a very disturbed state, no question. So let's look at the evidence. Stone had no alibi for the day of the murders, and he couldn't remember where he was because he'd taken some drugs. Not all that surprising, perhaps, given his track record. But he had this habit of stealing things from garden sheds, and he'd stolen a lawnmower from a garden shed about 400 yards from where the attack on Lynn and Megan took place. There can be no doubt it was Stone who stole the lawnmower. It's absolutely... Yeah. So, if you like, he's in the right place.
He's nearby.
There's also no doubt that Stone had blood on his clothes, and there were bloodstains on his toolbox in the car. He burned the clothes. So, Stone is remanded, charged, and during his period on remand, he confesses to killing Lynn and Megan to a fellow prisoner, Damien Daly, who he said to have confessed by talking along the pipe that joined his cell to Daly's next door. That's a little hole. There's a little hole. Right? Now, that confession was backed up by two other prisoners, but there was no forensic evidence to link Stone to the crime. And the confession, quotes, was based on facts that were in the public domain. In other words, he could have read it in the paper, which was the basis of the defence's argument at his trial. Eventually, Stone is found guilty by a 10-2 majority of the jury after retiring for about 15 hours, quite a long period of retirement. But evidence that was not presented at that trial was the lawnmower and the fact that Josie had recognised him. Neither facts were presented.
How because, come?
Well, they would probably be regarded as too pejorative. And we're one of the basics of English justice is that you can only present evidence that is not overly probative. We must have a chance to be interpreted more than one way. So that first trial which conducted 1998, was always partly because the two other prisoners, not Damien Daly, the two other prisoners, were both found to have, one lied and the other accepted money from a newspaper. So they were both discarded.
Mm.
The Court of Appeal in February 2001 ordered a retrial on the basis of the two prisoners withdrawing their corroborative evidence to Damien Daly. The same facts are presented, again, without the lawnmower. And the second jury found him guilty in 2001. So that's guilty by two juries. And this second jury, visited the cell in which he's said to have confessed
along
the pipe. They convicted a great deal more quickly than the first jury. So we now have a man who's been convicted by not one, but two juries, found guilty on both occasions. In December 2006, Stone was given a minimum term of 25 years, taking his release to 2023, not long away, theoretically.
Next year.
And he'll then be 63.
He doesn't sound like a great candidate for release.
No, probably not. Certainly given his medical and mental history. But there's the question of the shoelace. Now, Lynn Russell was tied up with a very long shoelace, about 3 foot, which at one point went missing from the police evidence lockers. So they couldn't test the DNA. So it's another little loophole. Not a big loophole, but it's another little loophole. And the campaign to release Stone has been going on, well, to my certain knowledge, at least 10 years, because I published the book on Belfield in 2012, and I was asked immediately, came out, did I think that Levi Belfield was in fact guilty of killing Lynn and Megan? As we both know, and I certainly know, Levi Belfield, or as he's now known, Yusuf Karim, because he's become a Muslim in prison, is a man who loves publicity. He absolutely adores it. He's confessed to all sorts of things and then unconfessed. This time, he's confessed, quotes, to the killing of Lynn and Megan Russell and the dog. And I think it's significant, the dog, because whatever else Belfield may be, and he is a profoundly evil man, he has great affection for dogs.
Oh, yeah, because he used dogs to lure people.
That's right.
Nearly Dowler to his car, yeah, maybe, we think.
That's right. He had profound love of dogs. But that's not the reason I think this wasn't Levi. For one thing, one of his partners, Joe Collings, who appeared at his trial for Millie Dowler, gave him an alibi for the 9th of July 1996. It was her birthday. And he was with her all day. Now, she had no reason to give him an alibi.
Mm.
Colin Sutton, senior investigating officer, suggests that Levi may have been playing mind games with Michael Stone. Because he's retracted the confession again now.
Okay. They're not in the same prison?
No. But he's retracted that. There's no evidence of any contact between the two. It's also said that the confession that Levi made contained details that were not known to the public. I'm afraid I don't think that's true. I think everything in Levi's confession was on the record.
Mm-hmm.
So do I honestly think that Levi Belfield was guilty of the killings of Lynn and Megan Russell in Chillenden in July 1996? And my honest answer is I'm extremely sceptical. I've told many people about that in the last week or two. It's not his modus operandi.
Mm.
Belfield would run up behind somebody, hit them on the head with a hammer, which he did to Amélie de Lagrange, for example, and then run away, immediately run off.
Not prolonged attack. He wouldn't tie people up.
He doesn't tie people up. There was no record ever of him tying people up. It's one of those cases when I honestly don't think so.
Yeah.
I'm not saying for one moment, that Levi Belford wasn't capable of and may well have committed other crimes. But I'm not sure about Lynn and Megan Russell.
Michael Stone seems a good fit for that.
Yes, but one can see. I mean, I talked to one reporter who'd been at both trials, both of Stone's trials, and he wasn't convinced that Stone was guilty, although he could see why the jury was.
Yeah.
This is a man who may have...
But then again, if you do have someone with all of those, history and mental illness and stuff, and you are struggling to place whoever's actually killed these...
Mother and daughter.
You might be like, well, this one's the best fit.
Yes, I think it would be fair to say that they went to quite a lot of trouble to try and pin it down. And I think it's another of those very blurry ones, isn't it? I fear that Michael Stone did commit the crimes and may well have blanked it out of his own memory and is therefore able and was able to convince a lot of other people, or at least certain defence team, that he wasn't guilty. But there is no... It's like that. It's like many very complicated crimes. It's no eyewitness. Josie was an eyewitness, but she was nine.
Yeah.
And
it was very frenzied violence.
And it was a frenzied attack. Did Stone give up, and did he decide not to kill Josie? We don't know. But I think the case is interesting because it underlines the fact that now, in the 2020s, we rely so much on CCTV, on forensic evidence. And this was before then. This was before the great burst of CSI, if you like, that there has to be forensic certainty. And you have, to some extent, to rely on the jury. The jury has the opportunity to hear the evidence presented to it. It's given very strict instructions by the judge to only listen to the evidence that's presented to it in court and not pay any attention to whatever they might have heard or seen or suggestions in the newspapers. They must only concentrate on the evidence that's presented to them in the court. And yet not one but two juries convicted Michael Stone. I think they had every right to find the evidence convincing. But equally, Michael Stone and his defence team have every right to question that. But given the fact that his minimum term runs out in next a year, it would seem to be, is this a case for arguing for miscarriage of justice? A big payout? Is that what's really going on here?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Which way round did it go? Did Michael Stone find out that Levi Belfield had confessed to it and then got his...
No. They've been in pursuit of Belfield for a long time. As I know to my... personally.
I know, but how come Michael Stone's sister called to say... Do you know what I mean? Like how...
Well, they've long suspected, the defence team, Michael Stone's defence team, have long suspected, if they believe he's innocent, who could have done it? One of the people they thought could have done it was Levi Belfield. And they thought, and I think they probably have some evidence, that Belfield was in the area at the time. It wasn't as familiar with the Medway towns as Stone was, but he was certainly not unfamiliar with driving around the south of England.
Yeah.
But this really wasn't his patch. If you look at the geographical profiling of what Belfield did, it was all committed within really quite a small area. All of which he was very familiar with.
So like Wimbledon and
yes, it's basically southwest, a big like a slice of cake of southwest London.
Yeah,
Walton on Thames being the far end of it, and into Twickenham.
Yeah,
up the A3 and all that. All his flats and all the places he stayed were all in the same area. That was his patch, if you like. That was his natural hunting ground. Also. Country lanes are not Levi's natural habitat.
Yeah.
He likes bus stops, you know, big red buses.
Bus stops and Wimbledon Common.
Yeah.
Not Wimbledon Common.
That's Rachel Nickel.
That's the other one. Interesting.
So that's the case of Lynn and Megan Russell. And my view, and it is only mine and I could be wrong, is that it wasn't Levi Belfield who killed Lynn and Megan Russell. At the moment, I'm still pretty much convinced that it was Michael Stone. But strange things happen. And I could be proved dead wrong.
Well, there you go. Listeners can make up their own minds, but now they know what you think, which is what they were keen to know.
Yes, so that is what I believe. I mean, it is... It's a horrifying case.
It was awful. It did really capture the public imagination.
Absolutely.
I remember it really well, considering I wasn't hugely old.
No, but I mean, it was very, very public. And it took a year to find, you know, to charge Stone. And there were appeals, and there were television appeals, and there was a Crime Watch, and there was all manner of stuff. And there was the petrol receipt, and Stone couldn't remember where he was. He said he thought he might have gone out, and it was all very odd. But I do depend on, to some extent, darling, you have to depend on the fact that not one but two juries actually convicted him.
Yeah, exactly.
And they had the ability, they had the opportunity to hear all the available evidence presented by both the prosecution and defence.
That's true.
The other thing I would say is that Michael Stone was clearly a very, very dangerous man.
Yes, that I would agree with.
As the judge said when he was convicted in 1983, he could go on to kill somebody. The police believe he did commit that earlier crime in 1976 when he was just 16. There's no doubt that he was a truly dangerous and frightening individual.
Yeah.
And is the... Could there have been a miscarriage of justice? It's possible. It's possible, but... Yeah, I struggle. I really do struggle with that one.
Interesting.
I told a man from the Times that this week, man from the Telegraph that this week. I happen to know the man who defended him. by sheer chance.
Well, there you go. That is the case of Lynn and Megan Russell, and you can make up your own minds or send us your opinions.
Absolutely. I'll be fascinated to hear what, you know, our listeners think.
We'd be thrilled to hear.
Yeah, I'd be very, very interested.
Yeah.
Send us a message. Now you can tell us all
you
how
can
to
send
do.
Us a message. You can email us at bloodties.podcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram or Twitter, bloodties_pod. Although I'm better on Instagram. I actually don't really know how Twitter works, so it's probably safer if you do it on there. And you can also find Dad's email on his website, jeffreywansell.com.
Yep, you can. So, Mo, what have you got coming up this week?
Anything? Well, we were going to talk about our Patreon
quiz.
Oh,
yes, let's do that. Yes.
We're doing a quiz for Patreon. Jeffrey wrote a quiz. We have definitely done the West, but that's actually... I'm not going to talk about that, because otherwise I'm not
okay.
Doing a quiz. Anyway, we're doing a quiz. We filmed a quiz.
Yes, we filmed a quiz, and we filmed... It's going to be put up on Patreon at the beginning of March.
March. And we're going to give out some prizes.
Yes.
We're not quite sure what the prizes are yet.
Yes.
But we're going to give out some prizes. They're probably going to be true crime or Jeffrey related. Or both.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would be lovely to have you join if you fancied it. And then we'll do that, and then we'll put the answers up at the end of March.
Yes, and what we'll do, I think, also, is we might make it a regular feature. We might do...
We're going to do some quizzing. We're going to do more for our Patreon, because we appreciate you, and we're aware we've been a bit slack.
Yeah, so we're going to do more quizzing.
And I'm going to get Jeffrey to do some crime roundups every month or week or something. We haven't quite worked it out yet.
No, but I think...
A bit more just... Because we were thinking, weren't we, when the Levi Belfield thing happened, you know, people keen to know what you think. So you could just give a little roundup on what you think.
Yes, I mean, I think...
The news of the week or the...
Yes, I mean, there's been...
Every other week.
There's lots of fascinating ones and... In the recent weeks. And so... We're intent on beefing up, that would be a good way of putting it, weren't it? The things we're going to do for Patreon.
Absolutely, yeah.
And make it a bit more exciting.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed doing the quiz. It was an interesting thing to do. It had a lot of charm.
Yeah, it was fun.
In it.
It's fun.
And I hope you like it when you get to see it.
That's our big thing.
Yes.
But thank you to all the people that help us, to our producer Sam Brain, to my brother Dan who did the music, my friend George who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, for Jeffrey because he does all the hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. I absolutely agree with Molly. We would be nowhere without you. And of course, this podcast wouldn't exist without her, who came up with the idea in the first place. Molly is pulling a face.
4 years later.
4 years later. Yes, all we are is older. Mm. But it's been a joy and is a joy. So thank you for listening. And as I often say, please be careful out there.